The group Doctors Without Borders is among the many international humanitarian aid groups active in Zimbabwe. It's also known by its French name, Médecins Sans Frontières, or MSF. Nicholas de Torrente heads up the group in the United States. We asked him how humanitarian groups like his navigate the moral dilemmas involved in working in countries run by authoritarian regimes.
It's really a very delicate situation because we're putting different interests in the balance. On the one hand, we want to be able to continue to work. If we're not present in the country and we have to interrupt our operations, then we're of no use. On the other hand, how much can we tolerate in the way of constraints, interference, and so on? And we've tried to negotiate that tough balance for many years in Zimbabwe now.
Well, the question, how much can you tolerate a particular regime, has particular poignancy in Myanmar, where you also have operations. A lot of people are talking about a moral imperative facing the international aid community in Myanmar. Many are calling for humanitarian groups to come up with some way, anyway, to get more aid in, even if it requires defying the military there. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, in very practical terms, that's what we've been doing in a way. I mean, we've been pushing and getting in, and it's very insufficient so far. And that, I think, is the most striking thing is if you look 1 month on after the cyclone, we're still encountering groups of villagers that have seen no assistance so far. And that's very disturbing. You know, we've seen journalists go clandestinely. We've, also explored these ways of going in. The issue of threatening military intervention, as has been put forward by some in the international community, it's really a question of whether that's, helpful or if that's actually counterproductive, especially with a regime that is as closed up and as, suspicious of outside influence. And when you make the link between providing aid and regime change, it actually can really lead for a regime like that to clamp up and to actually allow less access.
Doesn't MSF, though, have an obligation as a humanitarian organization to push back against a regime that's saying, no, you're not going to come in and help these 2.5 million people? I mean, they've been very slow on the uptake.
They've been very slow, and absolutely, we have to be outspoken, we have to talk about it, we have to talk about practically what needs to be done. But, we have to do it in a way that for us, in the end, is going to allow things to be opened up. So it does mean taking into consideration the way that this regime sees the world, and it means convincing them and pressuring them without doing things that may force them to actually close off completely.
If some steps were taken, let's assume China did not veto some kind of intervention, if some steps were taken to intervene and kind of force humanitarian assistance on Myanmar, where would MSF fall in that decision?
The problem with the military intervention is that it would be linked to much broader issues of political change in the country, and it would have most likely unintended consequences. That's why we feel that there are other ways of pushing that do not require military force. I mean, this tendency of trying to solve all problems with military means is one that we have to really look very, very carefully at. This is not a massacre that's going. And the idea of forcible military intervention to stop atrocities has been reserved, I think, to situations of genocide or crimes against humanity where they could actually stop an ongoing massacre, as was the case in Rwanda, for instance, where, as we all know, it didn't take place. And so we have to also nuance a bit how serious the situation is. And in doing so, I have to be careful not to minimize it either, because, of course, it's desperate. It's a tricky situation.
Right. I mean, one could also argue that by not pushing more against the regime to get this aid in, by putting the aid at the doorstep of the regime in Myanmar, you're kind of complicit in letting them do with that aid what they want, no?
They have been pushed. They have been pushed a lot. It's interesting because the picture of a military repressive government that controls everything is a little bit, on the one hand, they want to control everything. On the other hand, their capacity to do so is, especially in the parts of the delta and the remote places, is actually very limited, even non-existent. We've been to many places where there is no authorities to speak of, and we've been able to deliver directly to villagers and to people, directly. So in some places, they're controlling aid, and they want to, and we're seeing that right now. They're trying to control the aid more. They're trying to force people to return to their villages where there's no aid available. They're trying to reassert their control. But in other aspects of it, they actually have very little authority over what's going on.
Mr. de Torrente, I'm wondering if you could point to any historical examples that you think are good models that would point the wisest way ahead when disaster strikes a country led by a military regime like Myanmar.
Well, We have seen countries where basically humanitarian assistance has been either futile or meaningless and not been able to reach people at all. In our view, that was the case in North Korea, where, you know, we were never able to really deliver aid directly to the beneficiaries, to the victims. We weren't able to see them, talk to them, and make sure that the aid was reaching them. In the case of Myanmar, we are able to do that. So I think there are differences between these situations, even though they both fall under the rubric of military oppressive regimes.
Nicholas de Torrente is executive director of Doctors Without Borders in the United States. The organization won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1999. Thank you very much for coming by.
Thank you.